One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
It has to be said that in the Zoom era that we've currently reached, we thought we'd actually seen or heard it all from Armin Shimerman, from Kenny Johnson, from a variety of other bits and pieces. But the challenges that we've actually gone through in terms of actually getting our next super special guest with us have been quite frankly phenomenal. But we're delighted to welcome a true Renaissance man, a musician, a writer, an actor who starred in a whole slew of top quality series and actually been very much part of so much wonderful culture, including, of course, one of the topics we're looking at this week, which is Alien Nation. We are, of course, referring to the awesomely talented Gary Graham. Gary, good to connect with your good self, and thank the Lord is all I can say.
There you go. Praise Jesus. Thank you, Alex. It's, that wasn't so easy, was it?
Well, I think you do certainly take the gold medal, Gary, for being the most intriguing sort of way of actually having to connect. And thanks to your good wife, of course, for finally pressing the right buttons to make sure that we actually did connect. So, success.
It was easier to get to school when it was pouring rain and tempestuous winds when I was 10 years old, riding the bus and it broke down and slogging through mud to get to school. That was easier than what we just went through. But I'm glad to finally speak to you and see you. So thanks for inviting me.
It's an absolute delight and very pleased that you were able to actually reach us from that point of view. I'm just actually continuing our connection here. So let's go back to the whole notion of way back when. You were starting as a jobbing actor through the whole process. You get a role with Lindsay Wagner, which isn't bad by anybody's stretch of the imagination from that point of view, and a whole range
with
of things.
With a full beard and an accent from the Ozarks to boot. They hooked me up with Bob Easton, the Henry Higgins of Hollywood, as it were, and he taught me an authentic backwoods hills of Kentucky type of accent, and that was a lot of fun to do. That was one of my first TV jobs, actually, as I recall. Yeah, but Lindsay Wagner, what a lovely woman she is.
Well, I mean, and certainly somebody who's also connected with Kenneth Johnson, of course, who is really responsible in some ways, though he probably doesn't even realize it, for you actually being on the show today, because it was Kenny who we were chatting to recently in terms of the awesome work that he's obviously done in terms of TV stuff. And he did say that actually, even before the Alien Nation thing actually worked through, you said, you do realize I was on the Incredible Hulk, and you're responsible for David Bruce Banner going through a very strange and drug-induced scenario.
I dosed him with a tab of acid. Oh, my God. That's how jealous I was of his attention paid to Mackenzie Phillips. And I was her head roadie or something. That was a fun little gig. Bill Bixby, God rest his soul, just a lovely human being, just beautiful in all his work. It was just lovely working with. Oddly enough, I had to be reminded of Kenny Johnson having anything to do with that show, because I think I met him in the reading when I got the role. And then I don't think we really sat down and talked much until I was brought in for Alien Nation. Mm-hmm. And I had completely forgotten meeting him. But thank God he remembered me. Because they said they went through a lot of guys, and for some reason he wasn't getting the right. By the way, I digress, which I do often. Anyway, he said they apparently were not getting the right texture or feel or something from the role from the previous actors, and he showed me a list of the actors they had read for it, and I was pretty impressed that I was to be included in such a group. But it just kind of came together like magic, like kismet when we started working together. And I don't know what I had or what I brought, I guess it's just me, but For some reason, we clicked and have been clicking ever since.
Got to say, Gary, the series holds up extraordinarily well. I mean, I can't believe it's 30 years since Alien Nation actually hit the airways and crossed over. I took the opportunity recently to actually have another look at it, and so many of the messages that are actually there managed to get the point across so successfully without over. And I mean, basically, we live in a society where things have changed and adjusted, etc. But I just felt that the subtlety was actually there, and it was good writing and fantastic chemistry. I mean, the chemistry between yourself and, of course, Eric Pierpont, almost like the chemistry Chloe Rose, our ace songstress, who I can manage to say has also connected, brings to every one of these midweek drive scenarios. So, Chloe, can I also formally introduce you to the awesomely talented Gary Graham?
Hello, it's lovely to meet you, Gary.
Hello, hello, Chloe. Nice to meet your acquaintance.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, I've been watching. Oh, I've been watching Alien Nation. I've even watched Warp Speed, your band. It's awesome. Absolutely loved it. The song you did,
nice.
It's Warp Speed, isn't it? Yeah, really good. I like
you. Yeah, the name of the group, Warp Speed, is the first song that I wrote for the band. And
wow.
The group is called The Sons of Kirk.
Oh, The Sons of Kirk.
I wonder where that came from then, Gary. You know?
It's
an odd thing there, you know?
Star Trek.
Apparently, my bass player and lead singer, Mark Rivera, came up with that name. And when I heard it, I just said instantly, oh, yeah, that's it. The Sons of Kirk. And I thought, what that carries with it, that name, is the image in my mind, my sick, demented mind, of Captain Kirk, virile, strong, commanding, at the height of his masculinity, roaming with the Star Trek crew through space, encountering new worlds and conquering new alien women, and just being a randy sucker as he just fights for an unending.
That doesn't sound like the James Tiberius Kirk we came to know and love and appreciate. I mean, and Bill Shatner, you know, he's still going into space these days, so what the hey?
Negotiations have failed. Talk of peace is derailed. We need to do the deed. Time to take the lead. Gotta go warp speed. Cardassians are evil, and the Klingons ain't been peaceful since who remembers when. And now the Borg is closing in. The Queen is agitated, wants us all assimilated. Gotta go warp speed. Warp speed. Warp speed. Warp speed. Warp speed. Warp speed.
Non-reactive gravimetric field displacement manifold. 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 They're trying to chase us down. 100 ships on our tail. No time to clown around. We're overdue to bail. They want to make us bleed, but we will never concede. We're going warp speed.
Warp speed.
lithium is glowing. They'd like to blow us on the head, but we've got Federation tech. We're gonna pull off this caper, let them suck our plasma vapor, going warp speed.
Warp speed. Warp speed.
Shatner has done well for himself.
And of course, the other connection, I believe you're also in T.J. Hooker.
Ah, yes, that's true. that was, I believe, yeah, that was my first encounter with
the Shatmeister, as we like to refer to him in many ways. It's very important.
The Shatster.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he was great. I do a wonderful impression. Well, you be the judge. I do an impression of Bill Shatner when he chases me through Mulholland, through the Hollywood Hills, and I'm in my souped-up Porsche that I stole, and we come to this very, very dangerous turn that people who drive Mulholland in L.A. Would be familiar with. You better hit this corner right, or you're taking off through the valley in midair, and which is what happens to me, and I'm lying... My lifeless body is lying on the ground next to my exploding fiery Porsche, and he rushes up to the edge of the cliff and looks down, and he whips off his sunglasses and looks at me and says, "You just weren't good enough, punk."
I got chills. Actually, I got chills, like, Gary. Literally got chills from that
point
of view.
Great.
I mean, you know, I mean, it was something Adrian Zmed, who joined us a few years ago now, of course, was Officer Romano in the show. I did actually ask Adrian, I have yet to find a suitable answer for this. Bill Shatner, who must have been in his late 40s, early 50s, when he was actually doing T.J. Hooker, would always, every episode, have the Hooker run, in which he was usually about 300 or 400 yards behind the miscreant, and he would take off, and he would always catch them. It's amazing, you know? Just curious sort of thing there. But anyway.
He was legendary in
exactly,
so many ways.
Exactly. We get, much legendary. Like yourself, Gary, because let's face it, but for minor casting scenarios, you would have been Ben Sisko. You could have been, well, Catherine Janeway. I'm not sure that it would have quite gone down that line, but
yeah,
it would be an interesting connection. You went for a whole series
of
Star Trek roles.
For an actor, you know, of course, they would tell an actor like myself, who's up for the role, says, "Gary, I'm sorry, we decided to go with Janeway as a woman." And I said, "I can play that."
Exactly.
Ridiculously so, but I can play that. Ah, the optimism. The optimism of unemployment in Hollywood.
It's all fantastic stuff there. Chloe, any questions you'd like to put to Gary about, indeed, the episode of Alien Nation that you've actually seen? And indeed, something which, if you'd been with us about 20 minutes or so, Chloe, I could almost see the character of Matthew Sykes in the opening credits of Alien Nation. When he's actually dealing with connecting with onto Zoom, going, "Rah!" and hammering it, but he didn't. You know, Gary kept his cool. He kept his cool. His wife came on board, and we got him connected. So
well,
that's important.
I returned to my cool. That's all. You can lose it as long as you get back.
How did you find being on set on Alienation? How did you feel about the character that you was playing as Matthew, with the actors as well? How was it for you? Like, you know, I just want to know more about it.
Well, to quote the great philosopher Tom Petty, it's good to be king.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. And everything after that is just a breeze. We work hard. Don't mistake it. We work very hard on that. And quite often the hard work came in when you were trying to keep a straight face. When I'm partnered with Eric Pierpoint and he's being George and he never breaks. He never broke character. I could not break him just, you know, as a lark to get a laugh. I couldn't ever get him out of character. He's a disciplined actor, unlike some people that I know. But it was just such a hoot to be on the show. And I was just filled with gratitude and gracious. It was gracious living. I'll tell you what. I loved every day, every moment of working on that set.
And of course, the great thing is very little makeup. I mean, Eric, on the other hand, had to have all the spots, all the sort of designs, etc. You presumably could just stroll in and say, "Well, let's do it then."
It sort of burned him that he's in 2.5 hours minimum of makeup every morning, so he has to get there early, and I fly in and 15 minutes they're done. Then I started to see that all the forced calls, there's a thing called in television film, what they call a forced call. When they have the SAG rules say you have to, when you're released from the set, you have to have 24 hours just to gather yourself and sleep and eat and do what you have before you're called to the next. And if you violate that, they call you in early and they can do it, but they have to pay the actor a penalty. Which can be quite substantial, and for every forced call, you're making some good coin, as they say. And he had just something ridiculous, like 20 forced calls our first year. And I'm thinking, man, have you bought that island getaway on Maui yet? It's amazing that. He would complain about it, but man, did he ring the register.
Well, if the Screen Actors Guild can do anything, at least it can actually ensure that the forced call is actually addressed. And look, you know, even in Britain, we actually still purchase the DVD versions, so it's all good. You know, there you go. All sorted through there.
Very
important. Has science fiction always been something that has appealed to you? Because obviously you're very connected with the genre. Obviously Sons of Kirk, it's got its references. We haven't even spoken about Ambassador Soval. We've talked about the Two Trek series and so on. Alien Nation very much from the hard SF thing. And its infinite diversity in infinite combinations. The classic Vulcan salute, which is just wondrous in so many ways. Is this something
Alex... It was not by design. The only thing by design for an actor in Hollywood is to get work. And regardless of the genre, I'm happy to work. And it just worked that way. I guess I don't know why it is that I did so much science fiction as opposed to other, but. You know, I started my early roles, a lot of them, except for the one with Lindsay Wagner, that lovable man from the mountains with a beard, which I quite enjoyed doing that, by the way. But I was the guy with the 45, you know, holding it to the clerk saying, you know, give me your money, all of it, you know, and racing out of there as the cops pursued me. I seemed to be, as my agent then said, Gary, you seem to be the punk with flair, de guerre. And, you know, so I would walk onto a set and people would go, are you the bad guy of the week? Okay. And, you know, I can do other things. I'm a really nice guy, honestly. I'm not going to rob you walking into your car.
You talk about doing other things.
You're in so many bad, you play so many bad guys and go, it's a living.
And Matthew Sykes wasn't a bad guy. He was a good guy. He was a friendly guy. He had his issues, obviously, but he was okay. You know, we worked through that.
Right, rough edge. The reluctant hero.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, I still was moved by the tears that were shed in, I think, one of the early episodes where Mary Shelley, the hooker, effectively the visitor hooker, the Tanktonese hooker, actually sort of loses her life, and it's quite an emotional scene. Again, worth addressing in terms of the whole series. But is it true that actually you were a qualified paramedic just as you got the role of Matthew Sykes? I mean, was this a case of, look, if the director gets too overheated, I can at least rush to his aid?
Well, I had, you've heard that story about me and Tom Cruise in Pennsylvania. My dad was a doctor, a surgeon. So, and I was, before I caught the acting bug and met a girl and followed her into an acting class, I was slated to go to medical school and become a doctor. That's what I was aspiring to. And a funny thing happened on the way to med school. I met a girl and walked and followed her into a class, and suddenly I'm on stage acting, pretending to be other people, and one thing led to another. I wrote a book about it. Where is that book? Anyway, Acting and Other Flying Lessons, available on Amazon.
All good platforms. Anyway.
Yes, yes. I had some, to tie back into it, I was kind of missing being around science and medicine and my dad's medicine. So when I went on my own, I pursued acting, started working in the business a lot. A friend of mine who was a ski patroller up at the local ski mountain, he knew I skied a lot, and he says, "Hey, you want to come ski with a ski patroller?" Well, you have to get up early. You know, we hit the mountain at 6:45, and put up signs and make sure, comb the mountain and make sure everything's safe and all that to open at 8:00. So I said, yeah. So I started hanging around with the ski patrol, and I'm not one who can see people doing work and not pitching in. So I was, helping them dig pads out of the snow and set up things. I'm doing the same work as you guys, but you guys get to wear the really cool jacket with a cross on the back. How do I get one of those? He goes, oh. He goes, well, you gotta sign up for, take basically EMT classes. It's called outdoor medical emergency or outdoor emergency care. And 10 weeks of that, and then 1 year, a whole season of apprentice work, being a patroller in training, wear a special cross on your back so they can see you coming. But I would I got a lot of experience doing that, and then jumped into ski patrol at the end of that year, and did it for 17 years. So now I can, I'm a first responder, working with the EMS, the emergency medical system, and doing all sorts of things, which sort of satisfied my desire to help patients and treat them, both on the hill and back in the patrol room. So I did that for a long time, and learned a lot of skills. And when I was on this movie with Tom Cruise, it was we were filming the last scene, and he had been sick for, a couple of weeks. Everybody got sick because we were filming in really cold conditions, and in February in Pennsylvania, just freezing, and these guys were in mud and wet and cold, and we were shooting till 3 a.m. In these really tough conditions, and the guys like Tom and Chris Benn, they were geared up in football uniforms, and just hitting a lot of hitting, very, very strong. And so they were just knocking themselves out, plus being wet and soggy and having to be warmed up. And they most everybody got sick. And at the end of the movie, they're filming this very highly emotional scene at the end of All the Right Moves. I recognized the symptoms. He was out on his feet. He had to sit down and was feeling very, very nauseous and faint. And so I, knowing these skills, these medical skills, I got to him and I said, hey, you know, let me ask you a couple questions. We're running down. Let me take your pulse. Let me, medic was coming over here taking his blood pressure and all that. And I went to the director and I said, you know, this guy's got to stay. You gotta stop. He's young and healthy and very, very good shape, but he's been, you know, sick, and they had to close down production for actual production for 3 or 4 days for him to get better. And he lost something like 20 pounds. And the guy's not, you know, he's probably 140 pounds to begin with. And he had lost so much weight. And I said, all those factors combined, you should really shut down for the day. We can't. We've only got this location for today, you know. And so I'm watching this guy. Here's a guy who can barely stand up, still in good shape, but he's been sick and he can barely stand up to do another take. And he's just trying to get his breath and, you know, have a little water, and he's proned out. And I'm kind of, you know, taking his pulse and checking his vitals. And the producer leans in and goes, Tom, we only have this location for today. Get out of here. Okay, do you think you can do one more take? So he was a trooper. Cruz was. He was a real tough guy, and he said, "Sure, I'll do it." And they got up and they did the take, and Cruz is great to work with. Nice guy.
That's the reason, Gary. If Tom Cruise is listening to this, you should be in the next Mission Impossible movie. You should have a starring role.
There you go. I agree. Tom Cruise is, kudos to him. He's terrific.
We heard, obviously, Sons of Kirk earlier with Warped. Musically speaking, are you a Tom Petty fan? I mean, you mentioned it from that point of view. I mean, what sort of music do you like to listen to inspire you or to relax to or to chill out? I mean, clearly you haven't heard any of Chloe Rose's numbers, but, you know, guarantee, obviously, when you hear some of Chloe Rose's work, you'll sort of say, yeah, we'll add her to the playlist. But other than Chloe, what sort of other areas would you like to hear musically?
Well, I'm a great fan of rock and roll, and that is a huge category. I even like country music. I play the piano. I grew up on classical music. My mom was a singer and would always sing during the day, and she put on her Robert Goulet and Frank Sinatra records, and so I grew up listening to the old classic crooners. Now, we do on our album that me and the boys are doing, the Sons of Kirk, we, Warp Speed, you mentioned, that's the first song I wrote, and then a bunch of others, like 4 or 5 others before I got the lads to write their own songs, and they've been doing that lately. So we got an album, our very first album, coming out very soon. We did an album of what I call hybrids, which are songs that me and my garage band would play, classic rock tunes. And I would take the music and then I'd substitute my own Star Trek lyrics, funny, sexy lyrics and all that. And that worked out good. I found out I have a talent for doing that, just plugging my own lyrics into classic songs. And I don't sell that CD because I don't have any copyright to the words and all that. So, but we pass those around. But this is an all original album that we've got coming out. Hopefully, fingers crossed. Hopefully around Christmas time, I'm thinking
we look forward to it. And I'm going to push you, Gary. I mean, you said obviously Robert Goulet. We could go Frank Sinatra. We can go Tom Petty. Which one would you go for? Give it a choice. So this is the song you want to listen to. Which one? What would you like?
You know, Alex, it depends on the mood.
What song was going through your mind when you were trying to log into the Zoom system?
Something hard hitting, metalish, like Led Zeppelin, classic Led Zeppelin.
Classic Led Zeppelin. It will be.
In I'll share a little bit of, I'm a drummer as well as a guitarist and a piano player. I was so frustrated. And when my wife was coming down to help straighten out and get on this, this Zoom call, I sat down on the drums and just did about, I don't know, 30 seconds of ripping riffs. She woke me up and kind of, come on, let's do this. Okay, all right. But anyway, I felt better. So I thanks for my drumming that when I'm in that mood, I just got to hit some.
It's better to actually sort of use the drum on that basis. So if we said Stairway to Heaven, would that work?
No, that's too slow moving.
Too slow.
That's driving, but it's one of those, that's a rock. That's the rock classic ballad.
I mean, are you looking more Motorhead and Ace of Spades?
Am I what?
Motorhead, Ace of Spades.
Not so much the hard heavy metal, but I still like anything with a driving beat. You know, I even veer off into rap music sometimes just because of the drum beat. I want to capture that, get it in my head so I can recreate it something.
I'm throwing in something else. What about Cozy Powell as a drummer?
Cozy Powell, who does he drum for?
He's a fairly famous drummer from British Isles. We can dig out some Cozy Powell, or we can actually sort of go down a completely different route.
Hey, I'm an old Ginger Baker fan from the Cream days.
Well then we'll go with that.
I'll soon be with you, my love. Give you my dawn surprise.
I'll be with you, darling, soon. I'll be with you when the stars start falling.
I've been waiting so long. Sunshine of your love.
I'm with you, my love. The light shining through on you.
Yes, I'm with you, my love. It's the morning, just we two.
I'll stay with you, darling.
Anyway, let's move into another character, from drumming to somebody who probably didn't drum too often, and that, of course, is Ambassador Sorval, a Vulcan who clearly had lots of issues with respect to Starfleet and such like. Was this a case of, finally, I can actually get into makeup, I can actually engage with my inner Eric Pierpont in this particular area?
As Marlon Brando famously said, if the makeup is right, you don't have to act so much. It's true. They had my scalp turned, pinned really close. And then the wig, which is flexible. It's like it flexes. So when they pin it in place and they let go, it wants to take the top of my head and squeeze it to them, the sides of my head and squeeze it to the very top. So that's a weird feeling. And that puts you in this weird mood. And I love that because it affects your acting. I was constantly uncomfortable. And this, I thought, good. I think that's perfect for Saval. He's on Earth. He's a Vulcan. He doesn't trust the humans. He's trying to keep them hamstrung.
Controlled.
In everything. He's the resistance to Archer's forward charge. And I just love that. I love playing him. I really love playing him because you know what, Alex? People think, you know, you just don't have emotions. And in fact, I misunderstood when we went there. We showed up to film the pilot episode. I met Rick Berman, and he looks at me and goes, I'm in full costume, ready to go, ready for picture. He looks at me and goes, whoa, you look like a Vulcan. I go, Rick, can I talk to you? Come here. I'm not sure I feel like a Vulcan. I'm not sure. I kind of guessed at the audition. I just took a wild guess, and it turns out I was right. But I'm thinking that he not only doesn't show emotions, he doesn't really have emotions. And he goes, oh, that's not true. Here's the deal. This is what the Vulcans did. They realized with their brilliant minds, they would probably end up blowing the planet up. Because they have volcanic emotions, but they had to learn how to sublimate them, to subdue their impulses. Otherwise, there would be no future for their species. And they developed the Vulcan way, which is somewhat of a mystic Zen way of looking at things. Strung on logic and reason, and Rick, thank you. And we walked around the soundstage just minutes, literally minutes before I shot my first scene on the pilot episode. Not sure whether I was going to be hired again. Not sure whether I was going to be a regular or anything. Just this one gig was all I got, all I signed up for, and. I said, that is infinitely more incredibly intense, hard, difficult, yet satisfying to play as an actor. I go, oh, man, you've given me so many things to, man, literally 10 minutes before they're called to the set, I'm getting this revelation. I just went with it, and it seemed to work. And I thought, oh, good, good. This guy's going to be a good, worthy foil to Archer. He's trying to do one thing. And I can be the impediment of this thing. I said, oh, please, Lord, let this resound and score with the writers and producers so that they say, ah, this is the guy this is a good nemesis for Archer's hero. And
did he prove to be, whether it was Shadows of Pajem, whether it was his interaction with Scott Bakula, whether it was Jolene Blaylock as T'Pol, it was great. Such a shame it didn't go beyond four seasons, but then that's Les Moonves for you. He has to make these decisions. Yeah. So that's what he did. And he's gone. So
yeah, yeah. All happiness. I was happy. I was happy to be in it that long. So in my part. So it was a great family, Star Trek. It was great. Great to be a part of such a vaunted franchise.
Well, we regularly feature Armin Shimerman, of course, who's known for his role in Buffy, but also Quark in Deep Space Nine. He's a regular and, of course, great author. I'm so delighted. And I have to say, Gary, that I felt to myself, well, look, if Armin could actually work out how to get the Zoom in, we can get you in as well. You know, that's the important thing. And I never give up, never surrender. And I'm so delighted we managed to connect. Chloe, any final thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask sort of, how did you make your first break? You know, how did that happen and what was it at the time? How can you remember feeling about it?
I love the way you put that. How did I make my first break? I love to think that I control my own universe, that I am the captain of my own fate. And I love that. Because perhaps that's true. I'm was it Descartes who said, Oui, je pense tant je suis, I think therefore I am. As a man thinketh, so shall he become. And I've always lived by that. And I thought, well, I've imagined, when I started acting, I was this pre-med student who met a girl and followed her into an acting class. I never, you know, I didn't grow up thinking, oh, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to get out there. Can't wait to get in front of a camera and start pretending to be other people. I never did any of that. I was going to be a doctor. But I found that when, you know, everybody daydreams, especially teenagers and going through school. And I found when I was daydreaming, I would catch myself in these reveries where I would imagine being a certain person. And I didn't imagine myself being a doctor. I didn't imagine myself treating patients. I imagined myself standing in front of camera and performing and acting. And I would sort of jostle myself out of this reverie, and I think, what the hell was that? So when I ended up kind of gravitating toward acting, I thought, where would I ever think that I could do this as a living? Who does that? It's a pretend to be other people and do these dramas and pretend like you don't know people watching you. When everybody's watching you and the camera moves in for a close-up. And there's nothing more unnatural than acting. There's nothing more. It's just crazy. Be naked, emotionally naked and transparent. When the camera, all this activity is going off in your peripheral vision, you can see it all. And yet you pretend that you don't notice them. You concentrate so much on what you're doing that everything else goes away. It just disappears. And you just concentrate on that one thing that you're thinking and feeling. And emotive. It's a strange, crazy, crazy thing. And I wrote a book about it. Like to tell you about it. Here it comes. Acting and Other Flying Lessons. All you Amazon fans, I'm sure you can find that. Acting and Other Flying Lessons.
We have come full circle.
That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
We have two final questions
for you. You were reading.
Exactly. We'll be getting it out there. And Chloe, as a drama teacher, when she's not actually writing songs and singing them, we'll obviously get her students to actually do it, as indeed will I as well, from that point of view. So we'll get the message out there. Gary, it's been awesome connecting together with your good self today for your debut on the Midweek Drive. The two final questions, which are the critical ones. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer now that we got through it in the end? Has it been okay for you? Was it good for you?
Yes. Yes. I'm sitting in a very uncomfortable chair. Oh, okay. There I go. Now I'm good. It has been wonderful, Alex. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to this.
Well, then the next critical question, because I can certainly see that there's a whole heap of other material we can actually talk about, is would you be kind enough to join us again in the not-too-distant future and hopefully a little less fraught in terms of signing in with us? Will you be able to come back and rejoin us one time?
I would be most delighted. And I will hopefully I'll have something to send, some music clips to send you. You can hear some of our new songs, get a sneak peek. I've got a...
Yes.
Just a little bit of a compilation of that I did of four of our songs, just little, like, you know, 20 seconds of each song that I could send you guys, and well, we could play it on next time I show up. Anyway,
this would be fantastic. This would be great. As I say, we'll hear some Chloe Rose to go out. Chloe, what would you like to sort of dedicate as your number to end this particular sequence? So when he has a chance to listen to this, Gary can actually say, "Oh, so that's what Chloe Rose sounds like." When she's singing.
Oh, I don't know if I should let you decide this time, Alex. What do you think?
Hearts on the Line, perhaps, given that Gary likes some country music and the country vein. Hearts on the Line. And, of course, Vulcans, known for their hearts, after a fashion. Gary Graham, actor, runner, writer, paramedic, we salute you. Keep on keeping on. Take care now.
I wish I... Do you feel the same? Is it love or just a game? Will you change my life? waiting for you, just to say that I'll adore you. There's a beat.